And of course, we know next, after Lord Brahma, he approaches Lord Shiva, and certainly Lord Shiva should be able to protect him. But again, he is disappointed. He has no shelter there either. Because ultimately, everyone is subjected to the supreme control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, with just a flick of his eyebrows, can destroy the whole thing in just one moment. And finally, Devashamuni has to approach Lord Vishnu. And what does Lord Vishnu say? What does he say? He says that even though I could help you, I can't help you. Because I'm completely controlled by my devotees, who are Anya Bilasita Sunyam. They're without material desire, therefore I reside in their hearts. And because I reside in their hearts, it's up to them to control me. This is an amazing, the most amazing feature of our existence. Even though we are so tiny and so insignificant in the big picture of things, certainly our little lives are insignificant in comparison to Lord Brahma and to Lord Shiva, certainly to Lord Vishnu. But we have the capacity, by developing pure love for Krishna, to actually have control over him. This is the most amazing feature of our philosophy. That not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead answer our prayers and our wants when we are in want of something, through the Lord in the heart, all of these things that we think we need in this material world come to fruition only because the Lord is in the heart and he answers those prayers. When we think we need something, of course, Krishna is very careful also. Sometimes we may desire something that's not good for us, and Krishna will only grant those things which are good for us. And this is why people worship the demigods. They worship demigods like Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva will grant any desire. He's easily pleased, and therefore he'll grant you desires that are even not good for you. But Krishna will only grant those desires which are good for you. Why is that? Why is that? Anybody answer that question? Why is Krishna like that? What is he trying to do with us? Because Krishna likes to enjoy with his devotees. And the more pure the devotee becomes, the more Krishna enjoys that loving exchange. So he has a selfish motive as well to bring us to that point. Krishna is sometimes described in the Bible that God is a jealous God, that he has his own desires, and he will invoke his will on a living entity very carefully and subtly, so that living entity comes to the point, back to the point, of being his eternal friend, his lover, his parents, his servants, all servants, ultimately. So this is the most amazing feature, that Lord Vishnu says that even though I could help you, I can't help you, because you ultimately have to go and apologize to my devotee, because that's the only way to get free from this offense. There are so many wonderful ways to go on this verse. Now, I know our time is limited. Bhaktisiddhanta said that sins, you know, the normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill sins that we commit on a regular basis, as conditioned souls. Of course, we're trying to avoid those things as souls that are trying to become purified. We try to avoid those things. But even if a devotee falls down, even if he falls into some illusion and becomes crazy temporarily and finds himself committing sinful activities, Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada says, do not worry so much about this, because the holy names can purify so quickly that it can wash those sins off almost immediately. He said, but what you have to worry about, what you can't wash off easily with the holy names, are offenses to devotees and offenses to the holy names. The only way to eradicate, he says, it's like a thunderbolt covering, like a protective thunderbolt, but it's an offense. It's a covering of a very powerful offense. Offenses are not easy to get rid of. Sins, very easy to get rid of. But offenses are more, takes a little more doing. So ultimately, the only way to get free of an offense to another Vaishnava is to approach that Vaishnava and beg for his forgiveness. Now, how can we examine our lives and see how many times we've offended devotees, and how many times some offenses are small offenses, but then we know when we commit strong offenses. Those are the ones that stick. Those are the ones that are hard to get rid of. Finding fault with another devotee is simply not acceptable. Because it's not acceptable, because Krishna can't do anything about it. So that's why it has to be avoided so carefully. Only by approaching that devotee and asking for forgiveness can that mistake be corrected. So in our course of our lives, when we interact with each other, we have to be very careful and only try very hard only to see those good things, only to see the wonderful qualities of a devotee. It's very easy to find fault, because the faults are there in everyone. They shine, they glow. We have very easy, we can pick up on those things. But it takes a little special thought to bring up glorifying the good qualities of a devotee constantly, always avoiding the other fault-finding, easy-to-fall-into type of mentality. So, that's why it's so pleasing for Krishna to see that a devotee is becoming a devotee of a devotee of a devotee. And Lord Chaitanya, what's that verse, Puskar? You awake? I'm trying to keep everybody awake, but you know. It's what's that verse, Vivananda? The verse where Lord Chaitanya quotes Dasa Anadas verse, Gopi. A little louder? Yeah. Thank you. I'll try to stay awake. That's because we are only simply devotees of Krishna. But not just devotees of Krishna. Krishna is more pleased when he sees us becoming devotees and serving other devotees. Everyone know that expression, love me, love my dog? Prabhupada expressed that, love me, love my dog. If you see someone walking their dog, and you want to make friends with them, doesn't matter who they are, doesn't matter if they're aristocratic, doesn't matter if they're just street people, doesn't matter. If they have a dog, and you go up and you say, oh, what a beautiful dog. Can I pet your dog? Immediately their eyes fill with tears. Yeah. Oh, you love my dog. You love me. You see, understand the point. So if you love my dog, love me. Love me, love my dog. In this way, as we try to make friends with people in this world, if they're walking a dog and you want to preach to them, you want to give them Krishna consciousness, the easiest way is to tell them how nice their dog is. And then the ice is completely broken and they'll listen to anything you have to say. Isn't it? So that's Krishna also. Krishna, he has his wonderful pure souls in this world, and if we serve them, Krishna smiles with tears in his eyes. Just that's in a similar way, of course, transcendental way. And he's very happy to see a devotee serving another devotee. Prabhupada was so happy to see devotees cooperating together to serve Krishna, cooperating with one another, serving in a very organized way, in a cooperative way, to bring about some successful preaching. Very happy to see this. He would mention this. Well, how nice you are all cooperating. And that's why he said, when I leave, we all know how much you love me by how much you continue to cooperate with each other. Isn't that? So there are some devotees that have exhibited these qualities to extreme degrees. This dasana, 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 das. And you see, this is how the parampara system is set up, just exactly like this, for the purpose of all becoming servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. We are directly servants of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna's dear devotee. And Srila Prabhupada is his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta. And we go back further and further through the entire parampara system. So we are servants in the same line, servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And then also, as we see, as we grow older, we see that there are grand disciples and great grand disciples becoming disciples of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. In this way, das, anadas, anadas, anadas. You see how Krishna becomes very happy seeing this system. That's why it's advised that it's very difficult to approach Krishna and serve Krishna directly without the guidance of a pure devotee. In this regard, does everyone know that story about Kalidas? I tell a little story. Wake everybody up. Hello, Haribo. Everybody awake? Kalidas was a great, very great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Very pure soul. He was aristocratic. He was wealthy, quite wealthy, well off, very respected amongst his society. He was the uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he had a special determination, a special vow that he enjoyed very much. Does everyone know what that is? Haribo. Anyone know what that is? No? Of course you know. Mataji? He had the whole thing planned. It was completely planned out, the whole scheme. He would even do some research to find out what this devotee liked. And then he would prepare that prasadam, and he would take it on a nice plate, and he would make sure that there was something on the plate that was going to be tossed out. and he did this continually. Thousands and thousands. He wanted to actually have the remnants of all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. That was his goal. You can't imagine his humility and his purity. He was not doing this for recognition, because he would do it in secret. He would actually do it in secret. So he would prepare something nice, and he would take it to their home, and then he would give them this nice prasadam, and then he would ask them, could I have the remnants of your prasadam? And sometimes he would get the remnants, and sometimes they would refuse, because they would say, you are such a Vaishnava of high quality, we are not qualified to give you our remnants, so we cannot accept this question of yours very seriously, so we cannot give you our remnants. So because of his great and incredible humility and determination to serve, to have this Vaishnav Seva, to serve, to actually experience this mercy of the devotees, he would, if they refused to give him prasadam, he would leave, and then he would hide somewhere and wait until the plate, sometimes on a leaf plate, you know, there's like a little remnants left on the plate, things are wrapped up and thrown into the rubbish. So he would watch for this to happen, and he would go get that plate, and he would lick that plate, and he would be crying in ecstasy. Or he would get that mango seed or the skin, and he would scrape it. He'd be in complete ecstasy. There was one episode like that, where I think the devotees, the name was Yadu Thakur. Yadu Thakur was a very, very poor man, and didn't have a very high station in life. He was a sweeper. You can't get hardly much lower than that. So in the caste system, he was not even in the caste system. He was outcast. Not even really allowed to worship. Considered like that. So, but he was a great devotee of Krishna. And Kalidas knew that. So he had a plan to get the mercy from Yadu Thakur. So he took him some very beautiful mango. And he knew that Yadu Thakur would not allow him to have his remnants, because he was very humble, and he knew that his situation was very low. So he would not want to give the remnants. So he offered these mangoes to Yadu Thakur and offered his obeisances to Yadu Thakur. Also, it was very interesting to note that when someone leaves the home, when someone comes to visit and someone is leaving, it is very considered cultural to go to the door and even to walk out to the waiting vehicle or walk with the person for a ways down the road. So when when Kalidas was leaving, Yadu Thakur would follow him, walk with him in this way, and he would finally say goodbye, and then Kalidas would continue walking until he turned around and he saw that Yadu Thakur was no longer visible. And he turned around and he would take the dust of the footprints of Yadu Thakur, and he would take that dust and he would smear it all over his body. And not only that, but he would, yearning to get the remnants of that prasadam, he hid in the bushes and waited for the remnants of that prasadam. So when Yadu Thakur ate those mangoes to his full satisfaction, then his wife also honored that prasadam, that maha prasadam of her husband. And she also licked and sucked that mango pit. You know how like a mango pit can get very stringy towards the end of things. After everything is sucked out of it, you have only this pit with some stringy things on it. So not only did he suck it dry, but she also took everything she could from that mango seed and the skin. And finally he waited and waited and waited. And finally she came out and she threw the remnants of the mango seed and the skin into the rubbish. Whereas Kalidas rushed to that point and grabbed that in. Now there's a third person sucking on that mango pit. So what could be possibly left? But he was experiencing great joy. His vow is to serve the devotees in this way. In this way he became very glorious. There's even another story also where he obtained the water from the washing of Lord Chaitanya's feet. So anybody know what Krishna Das Kaviraj, where he says the three great attributes that a devotee should try to attain, should try to get this type of mercy. Anyone know what those three items are? Premananda does. What are those three items, Prabhu? The dust from the lotus feet? Water from the washing of the feet of the Vaishnavas? And the remnants, and the prasadam remnants, yes. So those three things are sought after greatly by devotees who want to advance very quickly in Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand that as Krishna sees these souls serving each other in this Vaishnava fashion, that he's very happy, very pleased. So we should take these things very carefully into the heart. Just like right now, I am sitting here and I'm trying to serve you. This is a type of service. I'm not sitting here because I'm sitting here because Sesha Prabhu asked me to take his class today. But the purpose of sitting here, the purpose of trying to say something nice, is to enliven the hearts of the devotees. And if Krishna somehow can form the right words and the right ideas, then the devotees become enlivened, then that service is successful. So I hope that somehow I had a little success here today, trying to say something nice about devotees and the wonderful behavior that we should certainly exhibit for each other and toward each other. I would like to hear any comments or questions now. Your name, please? Narayan. Hare Krishna. Is that Buggy's? I thought that was Buggy's. Hare Krishna. It's a microphone.
Okay. Narayan. You were mentioning earlier how Krishna superimposes his own will on his devotees. Remember? You said he's a jealous God and he superimposes his own will so he can enjoy with his devotees. So I was also told before that due to our own selfishness and jealousy of Krishna, we leave Goloka Vrindavan to come to the material world, and Krishna gives us that free will. So how do these two facts meet?
That's an interesting point, and it should have some interesting synergy, we'll call it. Because the question is, if we have free will, and that free will is very, across the board, very strong, then how is it that Krishna exerts his will over and exerts his will over that free will. It's not that Krishna exerts his free, takes away our independence or our free will. But he presents himself in such a way as to try to attract our hearts. He won't blatantly take away our illusion. He won't blatantly take away our material desires and just make us love him. That he could easily do. That he could easily do. But he allows the living entity with that free will to again, with his own intelligence and his own determination, to regain that natural condition of relationship between him and Krishna. Own will. Yeah. But Krishna has his own desire. His desire is that he wants every living entity to interact in a loving exchange with him. That's why that's our only purpose of our existence. There is no other purpose to our existence. That's only logical, isn't it? Doesn't it seem logical? Can anybody else give another purpose of our existence? Is it just to have sense gratification and die? Can anybody else come up with a better conclusion? That the Supreme Person, the reason that we have loving exchanges in our world is because those loving exchanges are in the highest example in the spiritual world. And when Krishna exhibits those highest examples of spiritual exchange, when he comes into the material world, he does that for the purpose of attracting our hearts. He can't make us become attracted. He can only try to make us attracted. In that way, he's exerting his will to try and attract us, but he won't interfere and make us be attracted. But the point is that how can you not be attracted to Krishna? After you become a little attracted, it's so easy to become so much more attracted. And once that attraction begins, and once you're back on the road, back to sanity and to spiritual happiness, you really can't turn back. Rupa Goswami says that. If you want to maintain your material life, do not go to the banks of Jamuna and see this beautiful sapphire boy playing his flute. Because if you do, there's every chance that you're going to lose everything. It'll all go away. Krishna will gradually take it away. Because why? It was a very early point. Because he only gives us what is good for us. And that means the things that are bad for us, he'll also take away gradually. So in a sense, he's exerting his will by taking those things away. Because he wants us to come back into that loving relationship. That's our natural condition. It's an unnatural condition not to be able to see Krishna. Do you understand? It's unnatural to be in this world and not to be able to see God. He's everywhere. But because of our material desires, our separate, envious disease that we carry with us in this material world, we can't see him. So he comes in innumerable ways and forms and sounds to be able to attract us back to that position. But he won't just wipe it away. He could, of course. He could shut down the material world completely. Just with a flick of his eyebrows, the whole thing is done. Also, when he raises his eyebrows in a different way, he attracts us in a very intimate and direct way. We want to see those eyebrows. Those are the eyebrows we want to see. Sometimes when Krishna would come back from taking care of the cows, everyone would be at the edge of the village waiting for him to come. They'd be anxious, standing there, like crying, fainting, until they saw that dust starting to rise from the forest, and they started to hear the cows, and they started to hear the flute. And they would they would stand there with tears in their eyes, waiting to get the first glimpse of Krishna when he appeared out of that dust. And when he appeared out of that dust, he had this beautiful layer of dust all over his hair from herding the cows and playing with his friends all day. And his beauty is so extraordinary that no one can take their eyes off them. Only their eyes were filled with tears, and they would be able to be distracted from their own eyes, filling with tears, that they would be distracted from seeing him. And he would smile, and he would give a glance, and he would raise his eyebrows. And Nanda Maharaj says, "No need to go to the cow shed today. Just come home. We want to take care of you. We want to bathe you and feed you," like that. And so Krishna would submit, says, "Okay." And so they would go home, and Mother Yasoda and the gopis would cook all these nice, very nice preparations for Krishna's meal. In the meantime, the gopis would bathe him, and they would start to decorate him. And you can imagine looking Krishna face to face and putting the kajal under his eyes. And you're looking into his eyes, and sometimes they would become so stunned they couldn't even move their fingers, just looking to his face. And they would decorate him, and they would just make him look so beautiful. They couldn't stop touching him. They couldn't stop making him look beautiful. More and more beautiful, more beautiful, more beautiful, like that. And at the end, Krishna would look at himself, he'd go, "This is not at all acceptable. You'll have to do it again." And everyone would go, "Yes, yes, yes, okay, we'll do it again. We'll do it again." Because Krishna knew. He just wanted to serve his devotees that way, to submit to his devotees that way. "This is not at all acceptable. You'll have to do it again." And everyone would be ecstatic. "Yes, let's decorate Krishna all over again." In this way, every day was like this. So how we ever turned away from that beautiful face, we'll never know. Well, we may know, but we don't know now. But somehow we turned away from that face. And then we have all this society, friendship and love and everything we have in this material world to try and replace it. Is it replaceable? No, it's not replaceable. That face is not replaceable. One of a kind. And we have so many distractions in this world trying to forget his face, isn't it? "Oh, my beloved, I love you so much. I am so in love with you." This is what we used to say to Krishna. Instead, we give it to each other. This is the problem. Because we want to enjoy separately. We want to have the same experience, but we don't want Krishna involved. Why? Why is that? And that's why Krishna exerts his will. Because he wants that back again. He wants that exchange again. He wants to look into your eyes again. And you want to look into his eyes again. This is a very face-to-face experience with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But while it's happening, you don't care. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is another extraordinary feature. That is just beautiful, Krishna. And I'm offering him everything I have to have that loving exchange again. This is where Srila Prabhupada is taking us. It takes a little time and it takes a little suffering. Suffering has to be there, unfortunately. And sometimes we have to wrench these things out of our hearts. They have to be burned out. They have to be stomped. They have to be crushed. So the more suffering is actually a greater opportunity to get back this loving exchange with Krishna. Because Even if we experience this in our conditional state, sometimes some traumatic experience will happen. We'll have a great difficulty. Something is wrong. And we have to completely give ourselves to chanting the holy names. And then we feel Krishna so closely during those times. Isn't it? Isn't this Queen Kunti's prayer? She says, well, I can think of you and I feel you and I see you so intensely. I want this continually. Give me this calamity constantly, because I want to think of you like this, with this kind of intensity. Is everyone here pray for calamity? Oh, my dear Lord, please give me trouble. Please give me difficulties. We should. We really should. We have to suffer to get Krishna. It's not that it's just la-di-da. There has to be some pain involved. And it's only appropriate. We brought it on ourselves. We have to get out of ourselves. Society, friendship, and love. We brought this on to ourselves. It's all for a distraction to keep us away from Krishna. But when this no longer satisfies and you realize what the only place of full heartfelt satisfaction is in that loving exchange with Krishna, then we'll easily embrace our suffering. Easily. Krishna's waiting for us to come to these conclusions and to make the appropriate moves. Pray for the day where you can go in front of Radhe Shyam and say, I've had it. I don't want this anymore. I just want to be with you. Please, take it away. You can do like that. You can pray to Srila Prabhupada like that. My dear Srila Prabhupada, please, I just want to be with you and Krishna again. Do whatever it takes. If it means taking everything away, then take everything away. If it means I have to suffer some disease or some trauma, then let me have it. We have to go in front of Lord Krishna, Shyamasundara, Radharani, and pray like this. This is more difficult. No one really wants to embrace the suffering. But if you can do it, all glory is to you. Because this will bring about the most miraculous event. When you say to Krishna with all heart, with all sincerity, I don't want this anymore. Please, take it all away. And just give me your holy names. Just give me, let me see your face. Let me serve you. Only. Isn't it? Premananda Gaur Prabhu. Microphone, please.
Really appreciate what you say. My personal opinion is that we don't have to give the friendship and love to our dear ones to develop that for Krishna. We see them as part of Krishna's plan.
I think I know where you're going with this.
You know, I remember when I was in New Taliban, you know, when I came there and we were there, and many people used to tell me, wow, you're really attached to your wife, you know? And I said, yeah. So what are you supposed to do, you know, get married and not be attached to your wife and to your children, and then one day think that you're more attached to Krishna, and then artificially give away. It's happening in our society a lot, you know. So mm. I remember, because now you're touching the point, you know, I was before my Matasachi passed away, like the day before she went on Samadhi, I was close to her, you know, and then, you know, she came to me, you know, I got close to her and she told me, I love you. And I told her, please don't love me so much that you have to come back to this material world again.
Mm.
And she told me, no, Krishna is waiting for me, I'm going with him, but I love you anyway.
Of course.
So, if Srila Prabhupada says that he will take us back home, back to Godhead, and, you know, we will continue to do service in the spiritual world, if we make it there. So if we see ourselves as the enjoyers, you know, then, you know, obviously, you know, we get entangled. But if we see everything that Krishna has given us as his mercy to serve him, then I think that, you know, there is a way that you can love and be free by loving too.
Yes. No, it's not that by saying, Krishna, I only want to be with you, that you only love Krishna. You don't think that Mother Yasoda and Mother Ananda Maharaj were madly in love? They were. You don't think the gopis loved each other? You don't think the cowherd boys loved each other? They were inseparable. But they had Krishna in the center of this beautiful scene. Do you think that Mother Yasoda and Ananda Maharaj made separate plans to go out to the movies sometimes and not take Krishna as a babysitter? I don't think so. They couldn't take their eyes and minds off of Krishna, not even for a moment. Even when Krishna was in the forest with his friends, Ananda Maharaj would send runners. He would send swift runners to go out and find out, make sure that Krishna's okay, and get reports all day long. They couldn't stop thinking about Krishna, but they also loved each other tremendously. I mean, immeasurably. So the love doesn't stop with, when you give all your love to Krishna, it just expands. It's not restricted. But it's all in place. It's all properly in place. You love your children, you love everyone more than you ever loved anyone before. We're having Krishna in the center of everything. And that's why Srila Prabhupada had such intense love for all of us. For every person, devotee or non-devotee, he loved everyone intensely. He didn't want to see anyone suffer anymore in this material world. He wanted them all to get captured and go back to Godhead and have a happy, beautiful existence with Krishna again. It's not because Prabhupada loved Krishna that he only loved Krishna and he just thought it was like a side issue that I should try to save the rest of the world. He really loves every living entity. And you could see it by his actions and his voice and his eyes. Everything was complete. That's because with just a small click of the dial, when you take Krishna completely into your heart again, everything comes completely and perfectly into place. Number one, you understand that you're not the controller, and you never were. You realize that Krishna has been in control the whole time. Only under the spell of illusion do I think that I can do anything in this world. Ultimately, it's all being done by Krishna's will. So let that will voluntarily flow through you. Small click of the dial. And all of a sudden, everything comes real clear, focused. Love for Krishna is our natural condition. And he's made it so easy. He comes in the form of the holy names to tear out all of his material desires and become addicted to his names. Love is the natural condition. It's just going, who are we going to love? That's it. Love is the only thing we have to offer. What else do we have to offer? Anything else? Can anybody think of anything else? Even Srila Prabhupada said, feelings, that's all we are, is feelings. When I heard him say it, I said, oh my God, that's really our essence, isn't it? All we are is feelings, Prabhupada said. So who are we going to offer these feelings to? When we try to enjoy separately in this world, material world, and we try to offer our feelings to other conditioned souls, very limited. Very, very limited. But when we take these feelings and we again revive our natural love with Krishna, then offering these feelings to everyone is it's magnified a million times. Because Krishna is so happy that the relationship is back. And now you can really love everyone. Sometimes people say that God is love. And true. That's true. God is love. Even Krishna is described as the God of love. So this is all we have to offer is our feelings and our love to Krishna. And everything will come back into place and be very happy. And we can all go back to Godhead and see each other there in these slightly different forms. Beautiful Satchitananda. Satchitananda forms. Not these aging, wretched, somewhat diseased, and disappointing bodies. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Sri Krishna Shyamasundara Radharani Krishna Balaram Shishi Gonitai ki jai. All the assembled devotees ki jai. Thank you very much.